They are the world's largest producers of canned tuna. So something fishy going on here, James. Something fishy.
Hey, you beat me to it.
Show. Hello, patrons. Happy Tuesday. And as we do once a month or so, give or take, James, Planet EFL time.
Yes, a delve into the lower leagues, because quite often there's shit we like to talk about, like financial problems, nutcase owners and the like. And this one might not be too far from that, actually.
Indeed. So the club of choice today is Sheffield Wednesday. We better make sure we say the Wednesday, not leave it off on the end. There are two clubs in Sheffield.
There is definitely two clubs. That's that much is of a certainty. Although what I didn't know, Suj, doing a little bit of research, did you know that Wednesday's first nickname was the Blades?
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I heard that they were used to be called the Cutlers because they used to make cutlery in Sheffield. And then the Cutlers got turned into Blades eventually.
So Wednesday actually played big games in the late 1800s at Bramall Lane.
Okay.
Quite often. And Sheffield United was essentially formed because Sheffield Wednesday fucked off.
Yeah.
in a nutshell, and obviously it's a rivalry that's gone sort of 125 plus years since. Wednesday weren't actually, they play in a part of Sheffield, I think, called Owlerton. And that's where the obviously link from the Owls comes from. But they didn't actually adopt the name as a nickname till someone, a player, gave them an owl as a mascot or something in the 1910s or something. Previously, they'd had a monkey mascot or something. Who knew? The things you find on Wikipedia always been edited really badly by a Sheffield United fan. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean,
Wednesday,
a big club. Looking historically, if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, you would know about Sheffield Wednesday getting to cup finals and all sorts. The year before the Premier League started, finished third. And now, nowhere to be seen.
When I grew up, we're obviously not too dissimilar in sort of age. You're a little bit older, but I look a lot fucking older. I always considered Sheffield Wednesday's quite a big club.
Me too.
My first memory is...
the biggest Sheffield club for me was always Wednesday.
To be honest, yes. They beat United in the League Cup final in 1991. My memory as a child wasn't that they were a second division side. And by the way, the last non-top flight team to win a major trophy in England when they beat United in 1991. Got promoted that season as well. Finished third in the year, as you said, before the Premier League was formed. I think they finished maybe 7th in 92-93. But one thing I always remembered about them from the 90s was there was good travelling support. It was well supported. And I think as a kid, that's how I thought of clubs quite a lot, was, oh, they're quite noisy, or, oh, you know, they've got a large stadium. I mean, Hillsborough is, I mean, the second biggest stadium outside the Premier League, maybe. Holds 40,000. And there was plans, if England had won the World Cup bid, to take it up to 50,000, actually. And I think even through these 20 years of being outside the Premier League, they've still been averaging over 30,000 in attendance. And it's that sort of thing that kind of strikes with you, that makes you think, oh, they're a big club. So one of the things I regularly got asked in lockdown was like, oh, who would you like to come back up to the Premier League, who at the moment's got no chance? And invariably, I kind of thought Forest, Wednesday, always seem to be the names that strike a chord with me. And I think a lot of that is because Wednesday were a part of my youth. They were a big part of it.
Yep.
And I think you remember even that first Premier League season, Chris Wood had won Football Writers Player of the Year, the forward line of Mark Bright, David Hurst, who was still to this day one of the unluckiest forwards I can remember, because that kid was always on the brink of an England squad and always got injured then for 3 months, and it was like rinse, repeat. He was a great goal scorer, David Hurst. And they had like Des Walker at the back and stuff, Chris Wood in goal. There was always players that were in the England squad and stuff. And then slowly in the mid-90s, it declined to succession of bad managers, basically, that obviously eventually led to relegation, I think, in 2000. And they went down very limply. That was the year they lost 8-0 at Newcastle. I mean, they were bad, right? And it's so bad that in 2005, they went down to, in fact, I don't think it was that long. In 2005, they came back up from League One, having beat Hartlepool in the playoff final, went down again, came back again. So they flirted more with League One than the Premier League until quite recently when they lost the playoff final to Hull. I think that was 2016 or 17, I want to say. And then lost in the playoff semi-final on penalties to a Huddersfield side that then beat Reading on penalties in the final to get promotion. So until recently, they'd been more flirting with League One than the Premier League. But then since the playoff defeat to Huddersfield, again, it's been flirting more with League One than the Premier League. So Carver Howard was in charge for that successful period. The season after was pretty bad. He ended up leaving. And since then, it's been a little bit of a conveyor belt in terms of trying to fix things, which now leads them into a position where, having got rid of Gary Monk and then now Tony Pulis, who'd been in charge for, I don't know, about 4 weeks, they're now looking for their third manager of the season, Neil Thompson, who Rob Pick, yep, that Rob Pick, might remember playing 3 times in the Premier League for Barnsley in 1998. Nope, me neither. Is in caretaker charge. I mean, favourite for the job last time I looked was Gus Poyet was amongst the running. Paul Cook, who was the manager at Wigan. By the way, their takeover's fallen through, so that news broke just before started recording. Yeah, I know. That's next month. Paul Cook, who was manager at Wigan, is 6-4 favourite at the moment. Joey Barton left Fleetwood yesterday. He's currently 2-1 second favourite. Gus Poyet, Danny Cowley, amongst the names being mentioned. I kind of came up with the idea a couple of weeks ago that I'm going to do a focus on Wednesday, because when I did, they looked doomed to be fucked.
Yep.
So they were given a 12-point deduction in the summer because of tax irregularities.
No, I mean, they broke FFP, right? You're not allowed to lose more than $39 million in a 3-season span, and they did. But then creative accounting talks about how... Like, you try and cover up whether or not you actually lost the money. Similar shit to, like, selling the stadium off. Does that count? Does it not count? What date was it sold? What date was it not sold? And in the end, I think that was one of the reasons why I actually got brought back to 6 points rather than 12 points. But, yeah, financial stuff. Let's just call it that. That's the problem. It's not on-field stuff, obviously.
Now, since then, they've taken 10 points in the last 12. And they've put themselves in a much better league position. They've now won 6 games for the season, which I think, if they hadn't had the points deduction, they'd be about 17th, 18th, which is obviously not clever, but there's probably about 8 or 9 involved in a relegation battle at the moment. And having just picked up this recent little run of form, they've suddenly jumped from 24th to 21st in the space of the Christmas period, basically.
Yep.
And it's looking a little bit better in spite of the lack of manager at the moment. They don't have a great squad. If you look through the squad of players, there aren't many names you'll know. You know, Barry Bannon, Sudge?
Nope.
Tom Lees?
Nope.
Kieran Westwood?
Nope. Is he related to Ashley Westwood?
What about Jordan Rhodes?
Heard of him.
An expensive signing from Blackburn, having previously gone to Blackburn from Huddersfield. He was going to be the big thing sort of 10 years ago, and his career has never really taken off. He's reportedly, Suge, on £35,000 a week still.
Good money.
Yeah, although he didn't get all of it. Well, I think he did eventually, but he didn't get the majority of it in December. So Sheffield Wednesday players were played late in December. Basically, they all got £7,000 a month, or their equivalent, if it was less, if they're on less than £7,000 a month, that's what they obviously got paid their salary. But anybody over £7,000 a month, that's all they got. Now, I believe that dispute with the PFA was resolved and the players did eventually get their full salaries. But your man in charge, who's just going to give a bit of detail on in a little bit, he said only on New Year's Eve, he said, with the COVID situation, we don't have any revenue. We didn't defer the players' wages like other clubs. We tried our best to do it, suggesting there are major financial problems. The payments will be made just a little bit late, so suggesting that players are going to get paid late again in January. We have expenses every day, every month. Everyone has a problem. We have a problem with cash flow. But at the end, the players will get paid. I can guarantee that they will get their refund at the end. This is in relation to the fact that fans are not going to get refund, apparently, on tickets at the moment. He said, we have many issues. we've just changed the system. It's a little bit slow and taking a bit longer. We didn't expect 50 to 60% to want refunds. The fans must be a little bit patient. Tell us about the chairman, Suj.
I'm surprised that they haven't been. I'm surprised they haven't been getting the money back as quickly as they need to. I mean, Dejvon Chansiri is a Thai owner, and we're probably all his customers. James, you into a bit of tuna, like a tuna sweet corn sandwich baguette?
Wouldn't be my choice, but you know, if that's all that's in the fridge at 3 a.m.
They are the world's largest producers of canned tuna. So something fishy going on here, James. Something fishy.
Hey, you beat me to it.
I mean, they're reportedly worth, the group is worth $750 million. So no pissing about here. They are rich. Not billionaires, but rich enough to be able to afford a club in the championship. But the thing I think is really interesting with him is if you listen to a number of interviews that he has given, and most recently he did one with Rob Staton for the BBC, which is on Rob Staton's own YouTube channel, so you can go and have a look. It's a solid 20 minutes, and I think Chansiri does read some parts of it, but I forgive him a little bit, maybe because English not being a first language and what have you. The way I would describe him is he doesn't give a fuck. So there are times and situations where you have to do difficult things, or you have to make certain difficult choices. And certain chairmen and owners of clubs, like you look at Sheikh Mansour at Man City, right? Absolutely polished to a T. You put him on an interview and he will charm the pants off you, butter wouldn't melt. They're doing all sorts of fuckery, but he's as smooth as you like. This guy doesn't give a fuck. He'll just tell it how it is. I think he is his way or the highway. And he doesn't have the finesse or charm to be able to bring everybody on board with what he is necessarily trying to do. Rob Staton tried to push him on a number of things, like, for example, why don't we have a director of football? Or why don't you appoint a CEO to the club to actually run the day-to-day? Because it's a common thing, right? If you're coming in from overseas and you don't understand the football pyramid and the football culture in this country, have somebody within your management team or what have you that does. One of the big criticisms leveled at him is that he doesn't have a director of football or a local CEO or whatever else. He doesn't give a fuck. He's like, it is what it is. He goes, I trust the manager to make the decisions. Well, when you're getting through three in the space of fucking 2 months, you're not really trusting the manager. You're not putting in the foundations for slightly longer term thinking, let's say. And then there's also a lot of financial questions that have been leveled at him. The club's in debt, no doubt about it. And recently there was talk that the stadium was used as security against some historic debt, to which obviously people have questioned, why are you using the stadium to boost this historic debt or secure this historic debt? And he gave a fairly reliable, a believable answer in that the debt's historic. From quite a long time ago. It's the debts from before when he took over the club. Whether it is or not, who knows, right? But the people that have lent the money to the club were getting itchy feet about the club's ability to repay it. So they have two options at that point. They're like, give us all our money back now, fuck this shit, or give us some form of security and you can keep paying it off. And so he's probably gone and used the stadium as security for that debt. But he's very much a my way or the highway kind of guy. And I don't think it's for everybody on side. It doesn't feel like, you know what, we've got a vision here. Let's paint this picture and bring everybody on board on this journey. Doesn't help that then you get transfer embargoes, points deductions, etc. I mean, Rob Staton...
That might happen. Transfer embargo might come now because Rob Staton, of the pain of players.
Slapped him in the face with the first question. He goes, so... based on the fact that there's a transfer ban pending, there's points deductions, there's financial irregularities, how do you rate your performance as chairman? It literally was a slap in the face. I mean, there are a lot of questions surrounding Dejvon Chansiri. Forgive me for butchering your name, Mr. Chansiri, but don't spit in my tuna.
I want to ask you about the stadium refinancing in a little bit, because I don't understand how that works. But before I do, I kind of want to read another quote he said about Tony Pulis, who Tony Pulis is, all the listeners will probably know who he is, never been relegated in his career, etc. You know what you're getting. It's a bit like Sam Allardyce, but just a little bit bleaker in terms of the quality you're going to get, but he'll probably get you out of trouble. He said about Pulis after sacking him, he said, Pulis didn't know how to manage the team and he did not think the 62-year-old Welshman was the right fit. He said, we need to play attacking football. We need to play two strikers, not 5-4-1. We changed the plan after Pulis left. We played more attacking. What did you fucking appoint the guy for in the first place then?
Well, exactly.
What did you think you were getting?
Mad.
I would question anybody who puts their own name in the biggest letters you can possibly imagine across one of the stands at Hillsborough.
Yep.
So if you ever see a game, pre-game, you'll see this fella's name in big letters. And when I first saw that years ago, I was like, oh, is that their new sponsor or something? Or because you might see like a Nike tick in the stand or something. No, that's his name. So is the company that he owns called after his surname or anything like, do you know? Or
No. I'm not sure why he's done that. I didn't actually come across anything to do with that. The company is called the Union Group. The Union Group. So
I don't suppose the Union Group would have quite fit into the seats at Hillsborough.
Exactly.
So how does this stadium refinancing work? Because we've heard murky tales about Villa Park and Derby's Pride Park as well, and a couple of others, I think. So how do you do that? How do you secure money against a stadium, essentially? What does that mean?
It's no different to a mortgage on a house, right? So it's saying, look, okay, we're going to lend you £20 million, and if you don't pay us, we own your stadium, basically. So what happened a little while ago, so when there is security on a property, you have to register it with the land registry. So, for example, your flat, my house, whatever we live in, if you own it and there's a mortgage on it, you can go to the land registry and you can see like who has a charge, they call it, on this property. And something appeared on the 30th of September that the BBC revealed that there was a charge on the Hillsborough Stadium that was new. And what had happened is it was historic debt, but a new charge. So he hadn't taken a new mortgage, but it was old debt that had now been secured against the new stadium. The thing is, though, he'd sold the stadium from Sheffield Wednesday Limited, whatever the actual company name may be, to a company called Sheffield 3 Limited, which he also owned for £60 million. So it was like taking your money out of your left-hand pocket and putting it in your right-hand pocket and then saying, well, I've got money because you've got money in your right-hand pocket. We've got debt in your left-hand pocket, mate. So it's all about which pocket is your money in and who owns it and creating smoke and mirrors to try and get around financial fair play.
This is bullshit, basically.
So, you know, like Coventry City don't own their stadium, but they
Coventry City are playing at St Andrews at the moment, aren't they? So
they never owned their stadium because there was a third-party owner. Well, here, if Sheffield Wednesday don't repay their debts, someone else will own their stadium.
So does that mean if we're merging that to Coventry City's case, does that mean that Sheffield Wednesday could get thrown out of Hillsborough? Is that what
we're saying? Yeah, if the debt's not repaid. There is. It's not quite the same scenario, but it is like that's your worst-case scenario, yes.
All right. Rotherham 2022-23 it is for Wednesday then. I don't suppose the Blades will let them share this thing.
It's murky. And I think that it's one of the things that the Football League and the FA have to kind of sort of clamp down on because how many clubs do you know that are successful without a base? Like, look how much investment your club put into the new stadium, because you know what an impact having that solid, stable base is.
So, $750 million this guy's worth, right? Is that the number you said?
Yeah. It doesn't mean he's liquid, but
I get that. Yeah. But in the Championship, that's surely a lot of money, and I think it's because of people like him. The Premier League were obviously very reluctant to loan money to Championship clubs. And obviously there was the 50 million that went to League One, League Two. A lot of the argument was people like this fella, Coates at Stoke, etc. While these guys are rich, right? They don't actually need money themselves personally. So this guy's got 750 million Why doesn't he just inject a shitload of fucking money into Wednesday and get it fixed?
Yeah, it's true. But people don't get rich, James, by spending money.
No, I get that. But the football club's in a crisis.
Right now, yeah, certainly. If you, another thing that, in, I mean, when he did that interview with Rob Staton, and Rob Staton did a very good job of asking him very difficult questions, you get to understand the mindset and mentality of the guy, right? So I think they had a player, Fernando, at the time that they were talking about selling. And had they sold him, they would have obviously bridged the gap on their financial fair play, money in, money out, much closer. But he took the view that if he'd sold him, they still was going to be a shortfall on the financial fair play. So fuck it, I'll just keep him. It was like, if I'm gonna break the rules, I may as well just break them and be done with it and not bother having to sell a player cheaply unnecessarily to try and bridge the gap. So it's a case of, well, if I'm going to break the rules, let me just do it properly. I think he's tight. He comes across as particularly tight, and he's not the kind of person that's like, it's worth it to invest the money and take the risk to get promoted. Nah.
I think Wednesday fans probably won't have gone.
That's, yeah, no doubt, man. When there's a circus around the ownership of the club, I've seen it at my own club when people are Golden Sullivan out and all the rest of it. It doesn't help. It doesn't help anywhere else. And so when the owners are creating their own circus, as this guy is, I'm not surprised that Wednesday fans want him out.
Well, if you appoint someone like Tony Pulis and expect to play attacking football with two up front, etc., and when you're in the shitter and you need to get out of trouble,
it's like,
and then you come back and go, like, oh, I was surprised or whatever. I mean, clearly he appointed Pulis because he was probably best man to get them out of the shit, basically. And then he got in, and it sounds to me like a lot of the decision making was actually off the field, because this 4-game run that they've had started with a win for Pulis and a draw at Blackburn, which is quite creditable in that league at the moment. They've got good attacking players, Blackburn. And they've obviously won 2 games since. So it might have been that Pulis was beginning to get a turn out of this team.
Yeah, you never know.
It feels like something behind the scenes. He didn't like Pulis and was like, no, I'm not having this. I mean, these names being linked to the job now, Paul Cook would be the best appointment, I would think, who's obviously favourite now.
Not Joey Barton, no?
I mean, where's the proof that's going to work, etc.? I mean, yeah. Gus Poyet, Championship relegation, but I know he did very well with Brighton before he got some bigger jobs and stuff and carried them through leagues. But I don't know, Sheffield Wednesday is a very sizable job. I think it probably needs, Wednesday feels like to me like it needs a reconnection of the fans and the club. These things like not getting people refunded for tickets when they haven't been, I don't think Hillsborough was ever open, was it? That would have fallen under Yorkshire. Sheffield United never had fans, did they? So no. Wednesday wouldn't have either. So, I mean, it's January. What did these guys pay for?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It may just be the last couple of games that haven't been refunded, for example.
It could be that they're refunding them one at a time.
Yeah, West Ham were doing the same. We're refunding one game at a time or one or two games at a time. So
did you pay for a whole season ticket?
Yeah, I paid for the whole thing up front. Because the way that the ballot worked was you only get put into the ballot should the tickets reopen if you had paid in full up front. If you just paid a deposit, then you weren't eligible for the ballot. So there was quite a lot of season ticket holders who did pay.
I mean, that's fine for West Ham, but I think the risk for a club like Wednesday was you took all the income from, say, I don't know, 15 to 20,000 season ticket holders, and then you're refunding what would have been your income on a normal match day. You're now refunding the championship every 10 days or so, basically.
Yeah, if you haven't put it to one side, you know what happens? You end up spending it.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's necessarily the case in Wednesday's case because of obviously the player salaries, and they haven't really been buying players or anything. But it seems like a daft model to do that.
There's so many other bills. You've got to keep the lights on. You've got behind the scenes staff. You know, there's so many other ongoing bills that still need to be paid, that money just kind of, you know, needs to be used up. And we can see it because they can't play wages now.
I hope Wednesday come back to the Premier League one day. But I feel like we're way off here.
Oh, we are.
I still feel like, and sorry to the Blades fans listening, we've got a couple. Like you, I still consider Wednesday the bigger club of the two. Mm-hmm. And yep. I don't know if that's historical and it's if it should
recency
be.
Recency bias.
Well, maybe, but is it? I mean, they haven't been in the Premier League for 20 years, and Sheffield United have been up and down a couple of times. Wednesday won the League Cup in 1991. It's their one trophy since the early 1930s. So, look, they've got three league titles on the board historically, but you have to go back 80, 90 years to find one of them. And all right, Sheffield United have never won anything, basically. But they're the club that's there at the moment, right? Mm. I just feel like Wednesday's always had bigger support and more power, and more scope. It always felt like a little bit like a Villa or Leeds, and I don't think it was as big as either of those two particularly, but I've always felt like if they came up, the size of the club alone would give them a good chance to stay up,
yep,
and then grow if there was investment into the football club. But it feels like they got close a couple of years ago, it went, they missed the chance, and they're now more likely to head down rather than up. And I don't ever see it progressing massively with, I mean, this guy with the way he's acting and some of the quotes he comes out with, that's going to be laughable in the Premier League. It's not going to happen, is it?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So we'll have to wait and see what does happen with him. But the positive is, look, when you get a 12-point deduction at the start of the season, you'd think you're dead and buried, right? And they're not. I mean, mathematically, if the teams below win their games in hand, they will be back in the bottom three, but they've given themselves a fighting chance. So
do you know how they managed to get it reduced to 6 points? Because if you think back to when we did obviously the Wigan pod, there was a lot of us at the time were like, and I don't think anybody should be relegated for something that happens after a football season.
Yeah.
There was a lot of, why is this getting incurred for next season and not just now? When Wigan's obviously went out with administration, it was different, but Wigan's penalty was obviously immediate. Wigan didn't get that, this will be added on next year. And I know it's in the rules that administration means instant 12-point deduction.
Yeah.
How did they get it down to 6 points then?
Can I just read it to you, James?
Yeah,
in the words of The Athletic, because they've written an article which was why Sheffield Wednesday's point deduction was halved.
So you're going to read me the whole article?
Nah, I'll just read you the bit. But why was the points deduction reduced? Basically, the appeal panel disagreed with the original panel that the sale of the stadium taking place after July the 31st was irrelevant to the case. So what these guys were saying was that we'd sold the stadium on such and such a date. And originally they were saying, well, that doesn't matter. Whenever you sold it, you sold it. But the appeal panel said actually the date of the sale does matter. And as a result, it's relevant to the seriousness of the breach. So it's basically not about what they did, it's about when they did it. And it was deemed as not as extreme. So
the moving of the debt to the stadium not only hides the money, kind of puts the future of the football club playing at their home at risk, but it did get them 6 points back.
Yeah.
Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got it now. Do you know what? Shit we take for granted in the Premier League, mate. I'm not joking.
I mean, look, this article was from the end of November, and just some of the stuff, like Wednesday's accounts for 2018, 2019 are now overdue. They might have been filed by now, but no self-respecting business will allow their accounts to become overdue. Right? You file them within 9 months of your year end, and that's when you file them. Otherwise, Companies House and whatever start fining you. But there's no legitimate reason not to do it other than you're too disorganized to get your accounts in order, or there's shit that you don't want to get out.
He needs to get football people in the club by the sounds of it.
For sure.
As your BBC interviewer said to him.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. We're done. The Owls. if there are, obviously, Sheffield Wednesday fans and people that are in the know as well, do jump in on maybe the general channel on Slack. There's an EFL channel as well, isn't there?
So yeah, EFL is a good place to open a conversation on Wednesday following this, yeah.
Indeed. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you do enjoy these little trips down memory lane and detours into the EFL that we take. If you do have any suggestions and ideas on ones we can do in the future, they're always more than welcome. But stay safe, my friends, and we'll see you soon. Ciao for now.
Thanks, patrons. Cue music, please, Manchild. Fantasy Football Show.